Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butterfat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice for chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label, and for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
I think it's hardest for me to shoot like a really sleek modern place. If I'm shooting in a restaurant, generally people are like, oh, let me clean up. I'm like, no, please don't clean up. The way it is right now, it looks amazing, and that is who you are. Like, I guarantee you it'll look awesome. It won't look disgusting or dirty. Like, there's a story here to be told, and like the moment you start cleaning it up, it removes it.
This is Taste. I'm your host, Matt Rodbard. Today we have Alex Lau in the studio. Alex is a food photographer who has shot covers and magazine spreads for some of the most interesting clients in the world. Alex also is the photographer and co-author of Korea World, a book I know you know all about. It's out next week. Alex spent 4 years working at Bon Appetit, and we get into his truly amazing journey from fashion closet intern to one of the most gifted shooters around. I loved catching up with Alex. I learned actually a lot about him, having known him for years and traveled the globe with him. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. Alex Lau, welcome. This is Taste. My friend, how are you?
Good, good. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so happy to see you. I haven't seen you. We were doing color proofs in this office a few months ago for the book. But I haven't seen you in the flesh in a while. So how are you doing?
Like, we see each other sporadically once every 3 to 4 months.
I know.
And most of the time, not in New York City.
It's usually not.
Yeah,
the last 2 years, we went to Korea twice. We traveled America a couple times. And, you know, I had such a great time just hanging out with you, buddy.
Yeah.
And I came to know you through your work. You know, I didn't know you. I just knew your work at BA and some of your commercial work. And I was like, man, Alex got style. He's clearly likes going out and eating at restaurants like me. And we're going to talk about Korea World, the book that you photographed and you're co-author of, and Dookie and I think consider you a co-author. Before we get to talking about your career and your history with cookbooks and editorial photography, where have you been eating these days? I think of you as such a restaurant fan. You really understand style and new restaurants. I always want to know where you're eating.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, a lot of it has just been at home. But I've gone to a couple of places. I went to Roman's again. I was, man, that place just holds up.
Yeah,
it's so good. And I live in the Fort Greene, Glen Hill area. So it really is to me just like the pinnacle of an amazing sit down neighborhood spot that just banger after banger every time. If you just want an amazing plate of pasta, it's there for you.
Is that still Dave? Is it Dave Gold? The chef there? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's the same guy. It must be the same guy who opened it, yeah.
Yeah, and then went to Sailor day. Where else? New York is hard because the reservation scene is so insane.
And understatement of the century.
Right, like even with Sailor, everything's booked out. I tried one week, got there at 4:30. Open at 5,
yeah.
We can see you at 9:30. And I was like, I can't do this. So I showed up the next week, and I showed up at 3:45, stood outside, first one seated. But that's the name of the game. So I feel like more often than not, I just end up eating at the restaurants outside of New York, which is cool. It makes travel that much more special.
So when you're home and not working, you travel a lot for your job. You cook a lot, it sounds like. You're making food at home?
Yeah, but not to the level of you or any of the professionals you talk to and Taste.
Listen, man, I've seen you have some nice skills. I know you do, buddy. What did you make last night?
Just very simple. I just keep it like a shredded steamed chicken and vegetables and rice.
Yeah.
It's like super easy and
cool.
I don't know. It's like you guys make it look so nice, and I feel like my whole thing is like, oh yeah, like I'm really really good at making food look good, but I don't have the skills for cooking.
I mean, you believe me, I'm the writer on this project. Dookie is the one with the skills. But had you ever cooked Korean food at home? Have you picked up by working on this project Any recipes that you want to?
No, but definitely I feel like our experience making this book was just like an entire crash course of grad school in Korean food. Like, I had a very basic understanding of Korean food as, you know, a Chinese American, but we just went all in.
Yeah.
And there were so many new dishes, names I can't even remember, but yeah. We were just like trying so many dishes and executed in such a high level. And it doesn't even matter if it was like high-end fine dining or just like some ajumma's home, but it was like, we tasted the best of the best.
I love that you mentioned just the diversity, because that's a huge part of our book that we worked on for, you know, 3 years, about the idea that, you know, Korean food is not just barbecue. It's not what you think.
It's not just bibimbap.
Bibimbap, yeah.
Bulgogi, yeah.
We'll sprinkle this conversation with some memories of our travels, but in Korea, where we went twice together, and you've been many other times before, let me ask you, was there a couple dishes, one dish that really stuck out when you're talking about high level, but maybe in an unexpected place?
I mean, probably the one that was the most unsuspecting was when we shot in that older woman, that grandma's home, that was literally in like a bunker. It was like, we walked through like four alleyways to the back space, and it was just her home, and she prepared like a beautiful fish dish that I can't even begin to describe, but it was just insane. It was like, it was such a special moment, because we were just sitting in her home, and the living room and dining room and kitchen, everything was literally, it was a studio essentially.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the TV's playing, and just sitting there and just made an incredible meal for us.
I loved that memory, and I'm glad you brought that up. And that was our first trip to Korea, I believe. I mean, that was like kind of near Ujiro. It was in a neighborhood that's being rapidly gentrified, and we were taken there. And it's one of the last remaining places like that in that area. And it was a big story about Korea is the gentrification. And that was like it was a tray. It was a whole fish.
Yes,
and it was steamed. It was a gym. It was a whole fish gym, and it had like amazing mushrooms. You remember the mushrooms? It was like, I think like woodier mushrooms.
It was so good.
So good. And it was very like lightly seasoned. It didn't have like a over the top sauce on it. Very, very light ganjang. So happy you mentioned that one.
And like, I feel like one thing that's so interesting to me about Korea, and like, obviously it's so modern, so fast paced, and it has an incredible modern cuisine scene. But I feel like there's this hard and fast line between In the Korean society, where it's like, here's all the modern things, here's the young contingency, and there's this very small pocket of like older folks that are making traditional food, or might be more divey, or is quote unquote, you know, not as Instagram friendly, but is beautiful food. And finding the two different pockets and exploring both to like the extreme ends was so interesting to me because it's you don't get it all at once when you're in Korea, right? When you go to a neighborhood, generally things are pretty polished, very branded well. And eventually, if you walk around Seoul, if you're walking around Busan, you'll find these smaller pockets where it's just all older folks. Yeah. And it just seems so incredible that they're playing like Korean foxtrot. Mm-hmm. Everyone is like 75 and older.
Yeah.
They're sitting outside smoking cigarettes, and it's just it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great point about this is a culture that's aging out of Korean society and culture, and this aging generation, some are doing better than others. And, you know, you did such a great job. The way you work is you're very, this is reportage at its fullest. You're up close, you travel light, and you shoot quickly. And I think that's a really difficult skill, Alex. And I think I commend you for being able to shoot. How did you decide on your aesthetic? Because you do have an aesthetic, I believe. I don't know if you agree with me. Please, like, disagree.
I have such a hard time describing my aesthetic or describing my work.
Yeah.
And it's still really interesting or strange or foreign to me to hear someone articulate their words or describe my work to me. But that's the name of the game, right? It's like, I create work and people respond. I don't know. I feel like the easiest way to describe my work is like earnest and natural. I'm not really good at creating moments. I'm good at capturing moments. Like I'm not the type of photographer that's like, all right, let's put this here and do that and that. I'm like, no, that here's this cool old lady doing something incredible right now, and it's gonna last 3 seconds. If we don't get it right now,
yeah,
we're gonna lose it. And that kind of lends itself as to why like my setup is pretty nimble. I work fast because moments are generally fast and I have to be able to keep it moving. And if something's not working, I move on. Or if like we show up to a place, I'm like, this is kind of dead. We'll move on. And if we're in an amazing place, I'm like, this is an incredible 10 minutes. Let's focus and dial in on these 10 minutes, yeah. Get it, and we'll move on and go to the next spot. But yeah, like I feel like my work can generally be described as like closer to photojournalism than like food photography. It just happens to be like food adjacent or involve food in many ways.
Thank you for indulging our listeners. I know it can be not the easiest thing to talk about your craft because it's, you just do it. I mean, it's truly, but I appreciate you doing that. And I'd say approachable is something, a word that I use with your work. I think there's certain styles that are heavily stylized and heavily lit that feel very studio. And that's, you know, there's a place for that. I'm not against it.
Huge respect to photographers like that.
For sure. It's a very difficult skill to nail every time in a studio. But when you're doing photojournalism and photorealism, it feels real.
Right.
Real is the word I think about. Was there an early shoot when you were starting your career that you kind of figured out this is something you really like doing?
I never planned to be a photographer, and it kind of just ended up as one. And I ended up as a staff photographer at Bon Appetit, where quite honestly, myself personally feeling I not necessarily floundering, but more like I was really just finding my voice. And I think it was maybe my third year in, and I got an assignment to go shoot an assignment for Mission Burritos in San Francisco, which sounds cool and it's amazing. But for my food photographer friends out there, or those that have tried shooting food, shooting a burrito is pretty difficult. And I was assigned 9 different burrito spots.
They look like little babies in blankets. I mean, they're unless you're doing cross sections, and those become boring. You're so right. It's not an easy thing to shoot.
This far in, it's still quite a challenging food to shoot. But anyways, I think that was really where I was given the opportunity to have free reign to just like go. And I think it was because maybe it was kind of a one-off assignment, or they're like, this is low stakes. Let's give Alex an opportunity to do what he can, see what he comes back with. And I'm from San Francisco. The Mission Burrito is very important to me. San Francisco is very important to me. So I felt like this incredible pull to be like, all right, you just have to dial in and perform and just like come back with something. And I think back then, maybe even now, but a lot of my creativity is like fear-based. If I feel like I'm in a place where the stakes are high and I have to perform, that's generally where my creativity comes out. But yeah, I think that was my first opportunity where like some semblance of my voice came out. And I think the core of my aesthetic, or like what interests me in photography, is like, I love fine dining, but like more old school spots or divey spots or communities that people might look over or like aren't as like slick and cool. I love finding the detail and the beauty in that, and like shooting beautiful portraits or shooting food that might seem everyday or a layman's food, but finding ways to make that look incredible and beautiful.
Let me ask you about the mission story. I feel, did you end up shooting a lot of portraiture during that piece? Because I feel that is a real strength of yours, because, you know, you're a food photographer because you shoot cookbooks and work at BA, but portraiture is like your strength. I mean, we have so much portraiture in this book. I feel so incredibly blessed and lucky that you were with us side by side and were able to shoot these faces. Because when Dookie and I conceived the idea before you joined the project, we were like, we wanted Career World to be about people.
Yeah.
We knew the decades since we wrote the first book, it wasn't necessarily about the instruction of how to make stuff. We like wanted community in our book. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you were able to shoot so many people and capture emotion was just, it's just phenomenal, Alex. And so when you're on this mission shoot and you're like stressed out, because nine places is, that's rough, bro. I mean, that's a rough.
Yeah.
And this is for the magazine, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So like, how are you, just like, you're like, hey, like hanging out and working back a house and getting portraits? How did this develop, the story?
I mean, it's also, it's just challenging in general. A lot of these, like, I mean, you know, like doing a Career World, but like the travel itineraries, it's a double-edged sword, because on one hand, that's where you make your greatest work. On the other hand, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going in to a restaurant, usually during service, you have a shot list. Sometimes front of house or the manager doesn't even want you there. They're just doing it because they're like, oh, we know this is good media, but we don't want you here because we're running a business and you're getting in our way. So there's this fine line of like coming to someone's house, being respectful, but at the same time, you're there for a job. You don't want to take over and like be like, oh, these are my lights, these are my, this is my photography. Let me like ruin the entire experience of the diners and the employees. But yeah, you go in and you have a shot list. So like, all right, I gotta shoot this burrito. You have to shoot the food, and you have to make it look beautiful. But for me, food photography, at least my version of food photography, isn't just limited to food. It's all encompassing. I want to tell a narrative, and that boils down to like, we have to make the food beautiful, but like, who makes the food, and how do we capture their soul and essence?
Totally agree.
And like, help have it translate and make it look cohesive with the food. How do we capture the beautiful nuances of the space? If I see this awesome mural on like in the restaurant, let's capture that. If I see an employee that just looks so awesome, you know, like they might not even know it. It's like some 17-year-old kid, but they look so punk in like a way that's not even punk, right? Like they're just like some.
They're like next gen punk.
I remember I shot this awesome kid. Like they were like 17 years old, and it was their first week on the job. And I was like, I need to get a shot of you just working the line because you look awesome. And it's just like finding nuances in a restaurant and finding things that just don't appear that interesting when you walk into space. But if you take a closer look, you're like, oh, this is amazing.
I think one thing I really loved when we were going over the selects when you shot for our book was objects.
Right.
And especially in Korea, which has such a patina of the 1960s and 70s in many spaces. It's like, you can't replicate this. It's like stuff that's like 40, 50 years old. So you're capturing that. In America, when the last third of the book is all in the new Koreatown. And, you know, we were at Peter Cho's restaurant, Hanok. And we had just an amazing array of objects that you found because you're just like interested in, I think you're a very curious person, obviously, but you're also interested in back of house objects.
Oh, totally. Like I think it's hardest for me to shoot like a really sleek modern place because everything's just so edited and clean.
Yeah.
And like void of any personality. Whereas like anything that's like, if I'm shooting in a restaurant, generally people are like, oh, let me clean up. I'm like, no, please don't clean up. The way it is right now, it looks amazing. And that is who you are. Like, I guarantee you it'll look awesome. It won't look disgusting or dirty. Like, there's a story here to be told. And like, the moment you start cleaning it up, it removes it.
Yeah. And you do a really tight select when you send photos through, even to, you know, Dookie and I, you know, I love that you really want the point of view to be clear. Cause you, and that's a big, big art, you know, form there. That's a big art moment is like your edit. Like when you deliver photos. Yeah. Some photographers will send you like 1,800 photos. Like you're sending like maybe 200 photos. You know?
I mean, I think every time we went to Korea, I came back with 10,000, 12,000 photos, and I probably sent you 100.
Yeah.
I'm pretty.
Which was frustrating at parts, I must say, Alex. No, I'm kidding. No, we got a lot of great stuff, but you are very tight with your edit.
Yeah, I think for photographers, the control and the vision is in the edit. That really is where your voice shows. And less is more.
Yeah. When did you first pick up a camera? I've never asked you this because I know your career and your trajectory to photography is non-traditional. You didn't study it in school, right?
No, I never planned to be a photographer. It's not that I didn't have a desire, but I had many other desires. I picked up a camera probably when I was 15 or 16. My older brother had a film camera, and you know, being a younger brother, you just want to touch everything your older brother owns.
Yeah.
And I was like, this film camera is awesome, and I'm just going to pick it up and throw a roll of film in and start shooting. That kind of gravitated into me buying my own digital camera. And I did a lot of stuff for the high school newspaper.
Oh, cool.
I did a lot of like high school sports and all that. There was never a point where I felt like, I am going to be a photographer. I'm going to be a professional. I'm going to get paid to do this. I always assumed like that's not in the books for me. So I really wanted to be a jazz musician. So I played the saxophone for 12, 15 years. And that was my goal. I got in a bunch of music schools, senior high school. It's like, all right, I'm going to go to Berklee School of Music and, you know, study saxophone performance.
You could be like Lester Young.
Right,
I could see it, Alex. Yeah. I had no idea, by the way. We've hung out a lot. I had no idea that you played.
It's amazing. Definitely an old part of my life.
I love it.
But yeah, so that was my goal. And I visited all the schools after I got in. And I was like, I am not meant for this.
Yeah.
They were just monster players. And I think I had an epiphany right then and there that I think was pretty helpful for myself, even in retrospect, that I was like, I was really good at replicating, but I wasn't necessarily good at creating as a musician. So I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm going to go to a normal school and figure out what I want to do. So I went to school in Boston at Emerson College, and I studied print journalism, which is funny because I was like, oh yeah, I can't cut it in music. Let's do something really promising and stable like print journalism.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You were getting it right at the right time too, because print was thriving.
Yeah, massive.
When you were in college, yeah. Oh my God.
But I did an internship at the Legislative Affairs Office at the Massachusetts State House. And I thought, it was like, maybe I could get into politics.
Yeah.
It was one of the most boring internships in my life.
Yeah, what were you doing that like made you feel like it was numbing you?
I don't even know. It's like I wore a suit every day, which is like cool for the first, 2 weeks, and then after a while I'm like,
it's like the dry cleaning bills alone. You just don't want to deal with that shit. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm sitting there in a suit, but filling out spreadsheets or pulling zip codes for individual voters that are registered to a certain county and having them reached out to certain congressmen, it got old pretty quick.
Yeah.
And I think if it really did interest me, I would have stuck with it. And I don't know, I could have had maybe a burgeoning career in politics. But
your bro works in politics. I know.
Yeah. My brother, Roger, he works in politics. But it wasn't for me. So I did that, and I was like, great, got that settled. And the summer after my freshman year of college, I was like, I can either go home, work at Safeway, work at the supermarket, get a job for 2 months, or I have to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since I was a kid, I really was into magazines. I loved magazines. I have this specific memory of reading. I loved the long form in GQ and Esquire. And I remember reading this story about this 14-year-old paparazzi kid. I think it was in GQ. It was like this paparazzi wunderkind, and it just followed him. They followed him for like 3 weeks. I'm like, that's incredible. And maybe on some level, that was kind of formative. It was like, I love long form. And seeing somebody thrive and succeed in photography was really appealing to me. I did an internship. There must be internships for magazines.
In magazines, yeah, sure.
So what's that magazine job listing site that used to exist?
There was like Media Bistro.
Or Ed.
Ed 2010.
Ed 2010,
oh,
exactly.
Man, back in the day.
Does that still exist?
I mean, the hilarious part was that it was founded in the early 2000s, and it was called Ed 2010 because the editors wanted to run magazines by 2010.
Right.
I don't think it exists anymore.
All right, so I was on Ed 2010 all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just
I know that.
Looking up every single internship listing that I could do, where it was either, I don't know, I think I applied to maybe 50 internships.
Yeah.
Copy and paste cover letter, copy and paste, resume, which had nothing. It's I was a lifeguard at the YMCA. I was a tutor, and I worked at the Massachusetts State House.
Yeah, it doesn't scream like food media,
No.
It doesn't scream that, yeah.
No. I applied to like Oprah Magazine, the Time Magazine, like literally every publication. Nowhere got back to me except for one. And after getting rejected after all of these, from all these publications, I was like a week out from the summer. And I saw a posting for a fashion closet intern at Esquire magazine.
Oh, sick.
And
whoa.
I was really into menswear. I mean, I'm sure you remember the era of like Tumblr and like men's.
Oh, so you were into like the Complex sneaker?
Yes.
Like throwing fits guys? Like
yes, exactly.
Guys. Yeah.
Throwing fits even before four pins,
Yeah, four pins, right.
I was always on menswear Tumblr. And that was something that was like, I was obsessed with. And I was like, I know menswear. I like magazines. And this is a huge reach, but I'm going to shoot my shot. So I sent out a cover letter. I'm like, hey, like, I love menswear. I don't have much on my resume. I would love to be a fashion closet intern. And I just sent it out. And I'm like, I'm not going to hear back. I get an email back instantly from, I don't even know if he's still there, Michael Stefanoff, who was the assistant fashion editor at Esquire at the time. He's like, great. Can you come in tomorrow for an interview? I'm like, okay.
I'm in
Boston.
Oh, you're in Boston at the time. You're in Emerson.
And okay. I was like, yeah, no problem. So at the time, there were these Chinatown buses that were like $5 to get from Boston to New York.
Dude, legendary Chinatown buses.
Incredible. I probably rode those hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I put together, my shitty Uniqlo suit
Oh, you suited up. You suited and booted.
Oh, I suited up for every internship interview. I treated it like a real job interview.
I think that's a wise move.
Yeah, I put on a suit and I got all my stuff. Took the bus Fenghua from Boston, New York. Took it up to Grand Central Station. Went to the New York Public Library and I took all my bag, all my extra stuff, stuffed it underneath the toilet, underneath a bathroom stall. So, because I didn't want to show up with all my stuff, I didn't want them to know that, like, hey, I'm coming in. So I hid it underneath the bathroom and the toilet. And I went in for my interview, you know, with my resume and everything. We sat down. He talked to me. He's like, what are your favorite blogs? Who do you love? I'm like, I love Scott Schumann. I love Josh Peskowitz. Yeah, exactly. Like the street etiquette guys.
Yeah.
And I think he was aware that I was familiar with the world. And he was like, all right, when can you start? And I was like, great, I'm in. Like, let's do it. And this was over at the Hearst building, like two blocks away.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Being 19 years old and walking into the lobby of the Hearst building, having no semblance of any interaction with the editorial world was one of the most defining moments of my life.
It's escalators, it's glass, it's a very secure office. Yeah, it's a very...
It looks like Blade Runner in there.
It does.
And I'm like, wow, like I've made it. So I started off my summer 2011 doing that. And it was incredible. It was kind of like Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
In a way. Like I remember watching that game day film the day before I started. I'm like, all right, like this is the closest I have to understanding this world. Let's watch Devil Wears Prada. And it kind of was that. I was basically in charge of the most disorganized and dysfunctional fashion closet I've ever seen.
Was it because stuff was just not being tagged correctly and being called in and just thrown in a corner?
Right. So the system basically works for magazines, everything's on loan for photo shoots. So tens of thousands of dollars worth of clothing, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of clothing or jewelry is all on loan in a fashion closet. And PR companies lend it out, use it to get shot on photo shoots, and they send it back. The thing is, a lot of times these things don't get sent back, you know? And I was in charge of either pulling from PR companies, hey, we need this, Xenia suit sent out immediately for this shoot with, Ryan Gosling. Here, sign all these papers and, get it back to us within a week. But it was me fielding a lot of emails we are missing this $30,000 Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, this Miu Miu, this piece from 93 is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, this handbag.
And Michael Stefanov would talk to me. He's like, you need to find this jacket right now. And I'm like, oh my God. But it was incredible. It taught me a lot about the world of editorial and fashion and...
I mean, you broke in with Hearst, which is, one of the big three.
One of the luckiest breaks I've had in my entire life.
Breaks are a relative thing. You prepare for them, and you obviously showed up for the job and did a good job. But, getting into Hearst and getting that name, brand, and resume must have really helped.
That was the sole reason I was able to keep continuing to do that. But, yeah, it was I spent my summer, doing a shoot with Ryan Gosling, and, I showed up in, a nice Oxford button down and pants, nice socks and Oxfords just to do that. I was just grateful to be there. And I didn't even do anything on that shoot. Sat with his dog and fed him apples. He's like, my dog George loves apples and with peanut butter on it, But seeing that being adjacent to all that, which is incredible. I was getting everything just by proxy or we need you to get an entire ice block, 10 ice blocks for Questlove. Don't ask why, but he's eating food off of a giant ice block.
Yeah.
And it was really, really incredible. And I think that moment, whether I knew it or not, I was like, I want to be in the magazine world.
Yeah.
I don't care how. I just want to be a part.
Because you were also involved in editorial meetings. And I think I worked at magazines as well. And really, when you start seeing all the superheroes come together from the magazine for an editorial meeting, where it's like the art department, the fashion department, the editorial department, the boss is at the front of the table. There's something very special about that moment.
Also, being 19 and being literally bottom of the totem pole, I was unpaid also too. It's so I was doing everything for free. So I was broke. But being 19 and seeing senior editors, creative directors, editor-in-chief, these are walking gods. These guys... It's just watching Athena and Zeus sit at a table with you, or rather, I'm sitting in the corner watching them talk.
Yeah.
But it was so formative. It was like a drug, just being in that world, and I was I couldn't let go.
So let's get to Condé. You must have done other work and was fast forward to the Condé interview at Bon Appetit. So you end up there. Adam Rappaport interviews you, I'm sure, at some point.
Once again, I didn't plan to be a photographer. And after like 4 years of interning for a bunch of places that Esquire allowed me to work at, I was like, I want to work either as an assistant editor or like a PA or like as a production assistant, anything. Like I'll be there. And my last New York internship was at Bon Appetit, which is very fortunate. And it was as a photo intern.
This is like 2014, 2015?
2013. 13. And I was like, I can't be a photographer, but I love photography. And my time at Bon Appetit was incredible, and I love food. And this is the perfect compromise for that. This is how I get my foot in the door. I was in senior year of college, and I was getting ready, and I was like, all right, let's explore options. I was interning at Boston Magazine. I'm like, maybe I can continue and just like be sort of a fellow and just do that. Or I was applying to with Atlantic as a media fellow. And it's like, whatever, like any form of structured program to do, I'll do that.
But you still had your eye on New York.
I still had my eye on New York.
You wanted to live here. I feel like you knew instinctually that this is where the magazines happen.
I was like being realistic and like, let's just get paid.
Right. Fair. And good instinct to have.
Right. So Teach for America approached me a month out from college. And I was like, well, this is cool. I mean, I tutored kids. Like, this is a job. And they described it all to me. And I did like 5 rounds of interviews. Talked them through that, and they're like, all right, like formulate a teaching plan. And like, they were discussing like, all right, like these are places you could go. You could go to like North Carolina, you could go to Louisiana, you could go to Florida and just teach like biology or math or anything. And I was like, there is structure here and there's safety here. And that's amazing. And like, but on some level,
you're pretty bummed out in some level because you knew you want to have a feature in magazines because you love them so much.
I don't know if I was necessarily bummed out, but I was like, no shade to Teach for America.
No.
But I immediately realized like, hey, I'm 19, I'm 18, like, or whatever age I was. And like the structure of Teach for America was like, me, an inexperienced kid, is being sent to teach at an underfunded school.
Yeah.
To teach in classrooms where experienced teachers couldn't even handle. And I was like, I don't know if this is for me. So at this point I had 2 options. It was that, or to work as a production assistant at Food and Wine. So I got an interview there, and I was like, this is amazing. I remember sitting down at that interview, and they're like, all right, so this is what you can do. It's a lot of clerical work. It's a lot of this. You're like, you're shipping out, you know, magazines and all that. And I remember I was like, that sounds great. So if I do all aspects of my job, is there any room for me to like do photography or do design like for the magazine? And they were like, no. At this point, I'm like, all right. It's probably still going to be work as an assistant in the production department at Food and Wine. That's how I get it. I get a call literally at like maybe 2 hours after I accept the job from Alex Pollock, the photo director at Bon Appetit. And I had sent her a bunch of emails in the past, just checking in. Like, I was like, hey, if any of your photo assistants leave or any openings come up, please let me know. Here's work I've been shooting. Like, I just want you to get a look.
Oh, cool. So you sent some stuff. And I'm sure it was, you know, just
it was fine.
It was fine, but it was...
No response. Yeah. I probably sent like, it felt like throwing a bottle into the ocean. I probably sent like, you know, 20 emails, nothing. I called whenever I was in town. I'm like, hey, look, I just want to see you guys again. No response. I showed up to the old Condé office. I'm like, I'm downstairs. And the security guard was like, no one's answering the phone.
I love it, Alex. This is like straight talk about how you get jobs here.
I mean, it never felt like I was like hustling, if that makes sense. I was just like, I just want to keep doing it.
No, and you like the people there. You turned with, and they're cool people there.
So 2 hours after accepting the job, I get a call from Alex Pollock. And she's like, hey, I am so sorry. Like, we've been so busy. And I've gotten all your emails. I've seen everything you've sent. Like, everything looks so good. We just made a new job. And it's a very junior role. It's new. It doesn't pay a lot. But are you interested in, and she was like, it's staff photographer. And I was like, oh my God. She's like, it's a staff photographer role. We just kind of want someone young to do all like, you know, the smaller things like for the website or, you know, little small subsets in the magazine, like product shots or, and someone to do like video work. I'm like, sure. Absolutely.
On the spot. You're like, yes, I'll be there.
And it's very much a thing. Like, everyone living in New York time, they're like, great, can you come in tomorrow? And I'm like, oh, I'm in Boston.
Yeah.
And I was maybe a week out from graduating, and I had no idea what I was going to do post-graduation. So I was like, this is it. So it's like I jump on another Feng Hua bus, you know, stuff all my stuff at the New York Public Library, go to the condo.
You know the move. They like, it's like your own locker there. Yeah.
Yeah. Do the interview, and they're like, all right, we'll talk. You know how hiring processes are. Like, all right, this was a good one. We'll get back to you in like, you know, a month or so. And I was like, here's the thing. I just agreed to a job with Food and Wine. And she was like, oh, okay. And they were like, we really got to expedite this. So I'm on the bus back to Boston, and I was like, all right, they'll figure it out. She's like, I got you a meeting with Adam Rapoport.
All right. Now we're cooking. I mean, it was instinctually spot on. You got to tell them what's up. Yeah. You weren't even like leveraging it. You just like, this is a straight story.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not trying to gain anything. Yeah. I'm just telling you that I committed to a job. It's like, you have a meeting with the editor-in-chief tomorrow. And I was on the bus back to Boston.
Yeah, somewhere upstate New York or whatever.
Yeah, right. And they're like, you need to be here tomorrow. I'm like, okay, so I had to beg the bus driver to, I'm like, please pull over. Please pull over. Like, I know you cannot stop, but please pull over. I need to get back to New York City. And he pulled over, and like, you know, I'm in the middle of like Westchester.
Yeah.
And I get off and like, you know, get my way back to New York. And I have a meeting with Adam. I have a meeting with Scott DeSimon.
Oh, shout out.
Right.
Love Scott DeSimon.
Throwback.
Yeah.
And it kind of started there.
Those guys know what they're doing. I mean, I really do respect that era BA. And the fact that your photos ended up in an inbox, I'm certain, I mean, you were probably a great coworker and intern, but the work you were producing at the time, you call it average, it's probably very good.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was an incredible time to be there. It really felt like the brightest minds were all there at that time. That semblance of like old school editorial magazine energy was like still, it had like a firm grasp. And like, again, seeing like all the editors and creative directors walk around, I'm like, these are gods.
Condé Nast at that point still had its shine, and we won't even comment on what's happened right now, which is a fucking shame. But really, you got like, you know, people like Carla Lali Music. You've got Alex Grossman. You've got Alison Roman in there in the mix, right?
Alison Roman before she was even famous or even like a senior editor. She was just a recipe developer.
Recipe developer Alison Roman, right. But clearly one of the sharpest minds in recipe development.
Absolutely. Like I think she's always had that talent, and like seeing her execute even back then was incredible. But I was just surrounded by talent, and I never went to photo school. It was never the plan, but like, or grad school, but like BA was my grad school. Like, and I was just like thrown into it.
So tell me about those first couple of years, because you mentioned the story previously, 3 years in, you're shooting Mission Burritos and trying to figure out this reportage story. But to get to that point, you must have been doing some pretty basic things. And how are you integrating with the magazine? What are you shooting?
I'm shooting a lot of like, you know, web recipes.
Yeah.
I was shooting with Matt Gross.
Yeah.
I don't know if you him.
Of course.
Yeah. Web editor, web director at the time. And I was doing basically all of like the very, very low tier things that people needed. Like I was either shooting sponsored events with Bon Appetit and, you know, a client, or shooting products on White, shooting web recipes on White.
So a little e-com, a little bit of web.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not particularly stimulating things, but
are you ever thinking about moving on and trading up and calling back Food and Wine and being like, hey man, I would love to shoot more, or were you pretty committed to BA?
No, there was a lot of self-doubt. I was like, what am I doing here? Like, and it really felt like I was like the bench warmer on JV, except all the directors were like, you know, college coaches. I'm like, I'm never going to get the call up. You know, like I'm seeing all these hard hitters, these incredible food photographers on set, you know, like Gentle and Hires and like Nicole Harriet, Mark Nielsen, like seeing them on set. I'm like, I'm staff, but like they're just on another level.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just a bystander too. And I was still in awe. I was like, I was just grateful to be there. But like seeing that, I'm like, how do I break and go into that next level? I don't know. But it was a lot of like identity crisis. I'm like, also like, quite frankly, I didn't know how to light.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to shoot. I kind of just like had a very, very basic understanding of food photography. But I spent all that time, and I was very fortunate to be like, to given the opportunity to develop that.
How did you come up with the single strobe? Your style, I'd call it iconic Alex right. Lau, because it really, and if you shoot with you, or just we were, I remember I was working at Punch, and I'm sitting there with Talia and Lizzie, and we're like trying to figure out, how does Alex light? Because we're like talking about it, and then I meet you, and we end up shooting a book, but you have the single, your single strobe is like what you're about.
Right. I mean, the single strobe look kind of came out of necessity, because yeah. it's like, one, even though I was on staff, I wasn't really given a lot of, I wasn't given a lot of resources.
Yeah.
So.
You had to buy all your equipment, I would imagine.
No, I didn't have to buy most of my equipment, but they would generally be like, we can lend you this just that.
I got it.
Which would mean we can lend you one strobe.
Yeah.
And at the time there were no wireless packs. So like, they're like, we can give you one like Ron color with a giant battery pack and one light, and you plug it in and that's it.
You worked with the big boys back in the day.
Yeah.
I remember hearing about the Alex Lau setup, which is funny to talk about you in the third person, but like, you had a big strobe.
And I would travel the country with that strobe, and like, I looked like the Unabomber. Like, I had an entire battery pack in a suitcase stuffed with like another light, and those things were fragile. So I probably shattered like 10 of them. So I would lug that around with me all over the world. I would carry heavy C-stands that weren't even travel C-stands, because they wouldn't give me the money to get a travel
C-stand. Ultra lights. Yeah, I remember we were checking into our flight to Jeju, and yeah, you got pulled aside.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure it happens literally every international flight.
Yeah. But yeah, so I feel like the whatever look I came up with kind of came out of that. And quite frankly, it's like, I don't feel like I invented that look or anything.
It just kind of came
out of necessity, kind of came out of inspiration from others. I remember seeing other still life photographers shoot cosmetics this way at the time, and I was like, that's really interesting. That's a really
but
cool
to be clear
look.
When we say single strobe, it's not Terry Richardson.
It's not
that's
Terry
a
Richardson.
Different that's like a smaller strobe, right?
Which is no, I mean, like Terry Richardson does more of like a point and shoot look, which I do like use sometimes, but yeah. that specific look you're talking about is where it's like, you know, like one light that's directional and like
yeah.
kind of can emulate sunlight, but or also just kind of looks like more of that retro 1950s, 1960s yeah. food look. But
which that, now yeah. feels like retro 2011, because everyone shot Terry Richardson style.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But your single strobe is different, because you light the full frame in
right.
a way, and it
yeah.
doesn't
it's
have
not spotty.
It's yeah. not spotted. Yeah. Right, right, right. And I think that's a really, really cool look that I feel, frankly, I know you shot a lot for Sweetgreen, but like, you look at a lot of ad campaigns and you shoot ads yourself, and we'll yeah. talk about that. But like, they copy. I mean, people are doing Alex Lau.
I don't know about that. They. I feel like I was more a part of the movement, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like yeah. my me doing that helped inform others, or I was informed from others, and we just kind of built a small aesthetic together. I would never really
yeah,
lay
yeah,
claim
yeah.
to that specifically, but yeah, I was part of that movement. Now, you know, advertising is generally 5-6 years behind from editorial, so did that 6 years ago, and now everyone's doing it now.
Yeah. All right, so I want to push the conversation forward a little bit, because we have some, I want to cover some cookbook stuff,
right.
not Korea World, but some of your other cookbook world. But like, you left BA, you know, times at BA were tumultuous, and we've had plenty of talk about it on the show. We don't need to relitigate any of that stuff, because it's very well documented. But I mean, I guess in general, I want to ask the last BA question. Do you miss working at BA?
I mean, there's some aspects I definitely miss about it. Like, my job now as a freelance photographer is so different.
Yeah.
There was a community there, and there was like people that, you know, you show up and you work with the same people every time, which doesn't happen to me now. But yeah, I miss having that energy and like people, a specific team working towards the same goal every month. Like, let's make another great issue, and being in that process. And it was just great being around such talented people.
I mean, it's why I love magazines myself.
Right.
We carry that ethic at Taste in a much smaller level, but we definitely like to drive towards projects. And I just hope, do you feel like there could be a culture around food magazines similar to BA back in 2013 now? Do you think there is a place that that happens?
I really hope so. I mean, I feel like the structure of that is vastly different than it is now. I feel like talent is a lot more separated. So it's hard to formulate think tanks or like specific creative teams. And either most of that talent has either gone to advertising or gone to tech, not specifically editorial. it would be amazing, incredible. But the bright side, I feel like it's a lot of that talent has shifted from magazines to cookbooks, which is why we're here today.
I love that segue. Thank you for doing such a great job at doing that, because I agree with you fully. I think the cookbook is truly one of the last remaining vestiges of a full editorial team.
Yes. Because
when we meet as a team to do a book, it's fairly similar to putting together a magazine in a different way.
Right.
I want to talk about a little bit of your other book work, and one I really want to call it is Rambutan.
Mm.
Just a terrific editorial work from Cynthia,
mm-hmm.
who I think is, she's on the show when it came out, and I'll link to the show notes. Great conversation about Sri Lanka. But I'd like to get a sense. When you're doing that book, what are you learning about Sri Lanka, and what was that project like?
I mean, first off, Cynthia's an incredible human being in person, and I didn't know her either before starting the project, and she cold emailed me, and she was like, I don't think Alex is going to respond to me, but I'll just try, and she sent me an email, and she sent me this small video that she had worked on. I'm like, this is incredible. Like, I don't know anything about Sri Lanka. I don't know anything about Cynthia, but like, this is such a cool project to do. But it was awesome. We did 8 days of shooting in London, where she lives, at a studio, and then we did 8 days of shooting in Sri Lanka.
Yeah,
that was a lot more reportage, B-roll.
What you really love doing? And have you been to Rambutan in London? Have you been?
I still haven't. I got to get over.
Oh my god, it's amazing! I went last summer. It was amazing. A terrific place. And then you shot the Nam Wa cookbook, which is such a historical restaurant in New York City, a Nam Wa tea parlor downtown. And I mean, some of the photos there are just iconic. I mean, I love that book so much.
Yeah, that's an incredible book too. That was one of my first cookbooks, so I was really finding my feet on that. But it was really cool, and like understanding the history of Nam Wa and me being Cantonese and like finding my Cantonese culture with the Nam Wa was an incredible project to be on. And yeah, that was a really special one.
I mean the photography is terrific. What keeps you busy now? Are you working on cookbooks is the question, because we joked, like, you're like, Korea World is my last cookbook. And I'm like, brother, I respect it. We've been pushing hard for this book. Really, it's been a lot. But then you're obviously back in the game. You keep getting pulled back in.
Yeah. Every time I'm on a cookbook, I say that. But I think the thing is, it's like cookbooks are kind of like being in the weeds. Cooking at a restaurant, and when you're doing it, you're like, this is horrible, and you're so dialed in, but you're like, this is insane, how do I keep up with this? And then you're done, and you're just sitting there, and you're like, all right, that wasn't so bad, that was fun, you know?
It's funny.
And that's kind of what cookbooks feel to me. It's like, it's you just get pulled in every time by the creative process, and like having the ability to like explore your vision and help tell someone's story. So yeah, I said no more cookbooks, but I'm doing Calvin's cookbook.
Bonnie's cookbook.
Right.
Here at Clarkson Potter, right?
Here at Clarkson, exactly.
Great. Excited to see that. It's going to be out probably fall 25?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, fall 25.
And then I'm doing Natasha Pickowitz's book.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And then I'm doing Rick Martinez's book.
Another Clarkson Potter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're going over to Mazatlan in Mexico for about 2 weeks.
Oh, and is that coming up soon?
Yeah, that's next month.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, well... You got terrific projects. These are iconic voices in food writing, and they're all the Bonnie's is the first book, but the other folks have done other books, so it'll be a little easier maybe. Is there a book that you would want to author and shoot?
That's an idea that you keep pushing.
I certainly do, Alex. I'm like literally whatever you need, whatever idea. I'm going to say it on the record, because if you want to do any book, I will be the writer. I will help book your travel. You just shoot the photos and like whatever it is, because I would love to. I just like hanging with you. I love spending time with you. It's like we have a great time hanging together. We have a lot of shit to talk about, and I just love your work too. I'm a big fan.
Personally, for myself, I don't feel like I have anything interesting to say or offer. From my own perspective yet. Maybe that's in the books for the future, but not at the moment, no.
All right. I'm kind of kidding you. But if the time comes, just hit me up.
Yeah. Publishers, if you have any ideas for me, please let me know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure publishers are listening and would love to hear that. And then on the commercial side, you're traveling so much. Are you just doing you're working for clients and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, a big part of my work these days is advertising. So it's kind of the stuff that, you know, pays the bills. that lets me have fun and do cookbooks. But yeah, generally stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, do you enjoy any form of the advertising work at all? I mean, you get to do some cool travel, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of travel. It's very different, requires a very different skill set from my normal editorial photography. It's like being a team leader, yeah, being a team facilitator, helping someone with, you know, a client with their specific parameters get to where they want, like, while not compromising my creative goal, right? So I think that's how I learned to deal with it. Like, be as creative as I can within these specific parameters without compromising myself. And I think that's the beauty of advertising, which is, it's a challenge that I'm still trying to get better at every day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's quite different, but still something I enjoy.
I'm sure you enjoyed in a different way, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely have you been anywhere cool travel wise? Like, I know you're always all over the place.
Right. I was just in Portland, Oregon the other day. I was in LA. I'm in LA a lot.
Yeah.
I generally work in LA more than New York.
Yeah, I mean, LA is a great place to
LA's incredible.
In general.
I love the food scene in LA.
Me too. I go to LA a lot myself, and it's a really fun place to like detach from New York and go to LA.
Yeah, no shade to New York where I live, but
yeah.
I love the food scene in LA a lot more.
You going to get that upstate place?
maybe.
You get your studio upstate. Well, Alex, I just want to say before I get to the last section, it's been such a pleasure. We're collaborating with you on Korea World,
yep,
and really it is a co-authorship. You are one of the three authors, and your photography just made the book happen. So thank you so much, buddy.
I appreciate. Thank you. Thank you for putting this all together. Like it was, I think it's definitely one of my favorite books I've shot. So
you say it to everyone, I bet. No, and thanks for sharing the story too. It just your story is really really cool to hear your journey. On This Is Taste, we ask guests about the discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid fire, fast and furious taste check. Alex, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, the best fruit.
Lychee.
Oh, absolutely. And fresh lychee.
Yeah.
Because I think the canned is what we typically get.
Right.
But where have you had fresh?
In Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Which is, it's straight from the source.
Ooh, yeah. It'd be so good. I don't think I've ever had fresh lychee. So the worst vegetable.
Like Chinese bean sprouts.
What are you?
Or kind of like the bean sprouts you would put in like pho.
Oh, yeah. Flavorless.
Not a fan.
They'll get caught in your teeth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good call. That's the first one that's going to come up. The best dessert.
Affogato.
Yeah. Is there a place that you got it that you literally like?
The one that's probably most memorable to me is either the one at Wild Air or the one at Estella.
Yeah, the Wild Air one. Yes. Yeah. Good call. Okay, your favorite American fast food chain?
Panda Express or Chipotle?
Both are God level. They're both quite good.
They do what they do.
They do what they do. Okay, these are going to be loaded questions, but I know you can answer them. The first one, your favorite New York City restaurant right now?
Right now.
Not of all time, but right now.
Bonnie's.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be. I mean, you're in the book, but it is a terrific restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even if I'm not attached to the project, like I think what Calvin is doing is really special. And I just went for dinner there the other day. It was a pop-up with Natasha and Calvin, and he's nailing it. He's nailing it, especially like someone putting Cantonese food on such a high level and making it palatable and like approachable for a wider audience. I mean, that is no easy feat. So
favorite LA restaurant right now?
It's Combi forever and always.
Wow, Combi. So you're getting that special Akira Kudo like private Combi food that
every time I go, he just makes a cannoli for me.
He just makes it for you in his kitchen. I mean, I think I miss that place.
Yeah, that place, it's one of my favorite places in the world forever, and it's very sad that it doesn't exist anymore, but that's it.
And you shot the iconic Bon Appetit cover, which was named them the restaurant of the year 2019, maybe.
Yeah, 18. The egg sandwich. Yeah.
Yeah, the egg sandwich, and put Combi on the map. So
shout out Akira.
Shout out to Akira. Your favorite cookbook of all time?
I love the Justa cookbook by Michael Graydon and Nicole Harriet. It's incredible. And I still refer to it all the time. It's just in a world where cookbooks have become so stylized or such a specific look, I think it's important to think about how the vision can age over time, or how it will be remembered as time passes. And Justa is a book that just looks so ageless, and it captures the specific energy of Justa and just that specific Southern California LA energy that is so special and can't be replicated in New York.
Yeah. A favorite recent cookbook discovery?
The recent cookbook discovery is probably the Mr. Jew's cookbook.
Yeah.
Which was incredible. And, you know, being from San Francisco, that is so special to me. The work Brandon's doing is so special, and it's incredible. And the design is beautiful. The cover is beautiful. Everything looks so great. And he perfectly encapsulates the energy he's putting out there in Chinatown.
Yeah. That's a great reminder. It's like 2 or 3 years old, but worth picking up.
Right.
Favorite city outside America to visit for food?
Either Hong Kong or Mexico City.
A couple more. Cuisine you would like to learn more about?
I'm very, I feel like I'm quite undereducated on like Eastern European food. I keep hearing about, I mean, you might know about it. There's just like that hall in Ridgewood where they, it's like a specific subset of like Lithuania or like the Czech Republic where they like really specialize in like a certain part of that region. And
I don't know.
I'm like, I don't know anything about like Eastern Bloc. You know, type of food. So I would definitely love to understand that a bit more.
Let's it's gotta be a travel story. You gotta photograph that. That'd be pretty cool. Last one, your favorite sandwich?
Banh mi, always.
Yeah. It's definitely my number one. And we drafted sandwiches like 2 years ago, and that was my number one.
Yeah.
Alex Lau, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in and joining This Is Taste.
Thanks, man. Yeah, glad to be here.
This Is Taste is hosted by Eliza Abarbanel and me, Matt Rodbard. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things that are happening.